In December, drinking hot chata, I'd look psychotic in a balaclava. Winter's cold is too much to handle. Pinch of crabs, a pinch at your sandals.
Hello and welcome to Weekly Beats, the podcast in which two guys give you their perspective on the weekend music. My name is Charlie.
My name is Mark.
And it's time for After School Special. Number three. Wow. Mark, it's been a minute since we've done one of these bad boys here.
I've missed every moment of it, man. I have so many... From the vault that is my dusty, barely able to remember anything mind, I have so much I would love to dive into, yes, and experience anew.
So if you haven't been around for a while, or if you haven't seen the other after-school specials that we put together, let's talk through how this works. Mark and I spend a lot of time talking about what is current and modern in the world of music, and most of our weekly show focuses on the current stuff from the year that we are podcasting. But man, there's just a storied history of bands and albums that have left their mark on us. And so, not Mark, they left their mark on us, not just Mark, but all of us. We decided to throw together a special on occasion that revisits some of those classic albums from our halcyon days. Our days of love and thunder, when we were just careless little boys with big dreams of the world and not a thought in our heads. And previously, we've talked about, you know, great albums such as Queens of the Stone Ages, Songs for the Deaf, My Chemical Romances, The Black Parade, The Black Eyed Peas, The End, which was a controversial conversation. So we like to get at least one great album from each of our past, share our favorite moments, some personal stories, and take a walk down memory lane. But then, of course, we'll also talk through an album that was popular and awful the time we were also in high school. Yeah. So this week on the show, we are going to dive into Vampire Weekend's second album, Contra, which came out in 2010. We're going to talk Say Anything's Is a Real Boy, and that's 2006, Mark?
I believe it's 2005.
It was 2005. Okay, 2005.
2004 or 2005. And,
okay. And then we will also be talking about SoulJaBoyTellEm.com from Soulja Boy, which was released in 2007. So definitely the second half of the aughts decade here on display for us. Right. It's a bizarre amalgamation of sounds, but that's how we like to do it here.
I mean, but at the time, was that really so bizarre?
Yeah, I think depending on which group of kids you talk to, they were listening to one of these three albums at the time, right?
Yeah. Everyone, maybe not for Say Anything, but I feel like everybody heard Vampire Weekend and Soulja Boy.
I think their self-titled maybe had a bigger impact than Contra did, but... I can certainly remember having some good conversations with friends about Contra at the time, too.
Totally. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, how are we going to get into this, Mark? You want to flip a coin to see who goes first? What do you want to do?
Let's flip a coin. I'd love to see how we flip a coin.
Okay. So I have a coin in my hand.
Okay.
On one side is tails. The other side is heads.
Okay.
Okay. You're going to call it in the air.
Okay. I call tails.
Now. Okay. You call tails?
Tails, Miles Prowler.
Okay, take a look. See the coin?
Yeah.
It's heads.
Oh.
So we're going to... it's my pick. And I say we're going to talk about Say Anything first.
Ooh, okay. Interesting choice.
Is a Real Boy the album. And the podcast begins... with a discussion of this album. Mark, talk us through Say Anything.
Okay. Like, my experience of Say Anything or the band?
I don't care. Either
one. You asshole. All right. So, basically, I picked this album up when I was 14 years old. and by pick this album up, I mean I downloaded a lot of songs illegally through the program LimeWire. Hey, fun.
Real quick, sidebar. Did you ever get a virus from LimeWire when using it?
No, I was very careful.
Okay, because friends of mine, I never used LimeWire, and I'm saying that completely honestly. I was a good kid that bought his music legally, but friends of mine certainly were afflicted by viruses from LimeWire.
Yeah, no, there was a lot. I definitely got some odd files that were files of Bill Clinton talking about not having sex with Monica Lewinsky and then telling you to go to a website. Maybe that sounds psychotic, but that was like widespread. Like everybody, I brought that up at a school lunch once, and they were like, oh my God, that ad. I swear. But I bought this album afterwards. A lot of the stuff I loved, I went and bought because I wanted to listen to the full thing. But, okay, so Say Anything, more or less, just to start the discussion, it's mainly one guy, Max Bemis. He's in his mid-20s at the point when this album was recorded. He suffered from a lot of anxiety as a person before this album came out. I was obsessed with Max Bemis. He, at one point, had a breakdown at a restaurant in public at lunch and, like, yelled at people and was, like, on the floor, from what I understand. But, yeah, I have just about a zillion members with As a Real Boy. It was like the exact kind of disaffected, too smart for you, but self-effacing kind of figure that I was just totally vulnerable to as a 14-year-old.
So you're coming into this thing hot 14.
The Billboard Hot 14. And the first track, before we get into the album proper, I have to say the first track was the high school classic, Wow, I Can Get Sexual Too, which I listened to because the girl I had a crush on at the time gave me a copy of that song, and I am endlessly interested to hear what you think of the song Wow, I Can Get Sexual Too.
Maybe I'll mention here that we tried to talk about this at one point, right?
Right, and you screamed and you left the room, you cried and you broke some things and left.
Well, I can remember listening to this album before. Like, I threw it on again these past few weeks, and I'm like, no, I know a lot of this. Like, I'm revisiting it. You know, it's not uncommon for me.
Right.
And what's interesting is that the version that's on Spotify is the deluxe edition. So there's like what, six or so tracks tapped onto the end.
Well, it's not a deluxe edition per se. It's the only version of the album you can actually purchase. But there's an EP attached to the LP proper. That was made for charity, which includes Wow, I Can Get Sexual Too.
Okay. Does the EP have a name?
No. It's just like the second like bonus disc, basically. But, yeah.
So, and every time that we go to talk about this thing, I can remember the first time you're like, I want to talk about this album, but I also really want to talk about I Can Get Sexual Too. Like, you emphasize that. And so the same thing this time around. Like, let's talk about the album, but also, like, you don't have to listen to those songs. We absolutely will be talking about this song on the show. And I'll say that this was not my scene in high school. I kind of steered away from more of the emo scene. We had a revelation when we talked about My Chemical Romance and the Black Parade, and I came around that album so hard and still play it to this day. Yeah. Unabashedly love that thing. I don't know that I'm as over the heels in love with this record. I think there's some good moments on it, but I think a lot of what I falsely attributed to the emo genre with whiny vocals, I think, comes through on these tracks. And Mr. Bemis's performance, it feels like a stereotype at times. Like, he's so overly emphasizing certain words and lyrics. And like you said, that smarter than you pretentiousness, there are some places where it reeks. and it just reeks to high heaven. Like, oh my God. Yeah. And I didn't really feel that way listening to the MCR album. But I think it's kind of probably the song, like, if I were to listen to this as a 9th or 10th grade student, I'd think like, oh my God, this is so taboo. And
yes,
like, I'm really getting into some dangerous stuff here. But for me now, it comes across as pretty tame. I don't know, almost like riffing on some like risque 80s song.
Yeah. Or even 60s. I mean, there's really
Just the idea of calling someone on the phone these days, like, who even does that anymore?
Phone sex? I do it every Thursday night. Only Thursdays. Yeah, I know.
And if we're gonna make lists about the great songs of phone sex, I don't see any spot in which Billy Joel's "Sometimes a Fantasy" is at the top of that list.
Wow, that's a great choice. That's fun.
You're right, because it's the best song about phone sex.
I have at least some soft spots for this song. Like, I have to say, the last time we were gonna discuss this, I was excited about it. And listening to it now almost gave me some pride in myself, because I've been trying my best to be more of like a self-reflective person, someone who is maybe able to more objectively analyze where I'm coming from in conversation or why I'm driven to do certain things. So when we were going to talk about this a year ago and then didn't end up recording the episode, I was still totally like, there's so much interesting stuff in this album. Listening to it this year in 2018, I kind of can't help but feel that there are moments objectively where Max Bemis is just getting in the way of whatever he's trying to do. I feel that in the song a little bit now, unfortunately, but I do think the beat is really cool. I still really fall for the very simple, like, there's just a keyboard and drums and emo vocals, I think is like a fun aesthetic to a pop punk song.
Yeah, it's a good melody, I'll say that.
Yeah, like, here's the thing that we're gonna maybe end up talking about, is that I actually think as a songwriter Max Bemis is talented. I think his ability to change time signatures, his riffs are really strong. He leans too heavily on like a group, like chant vocals for the choruses, but he knows how to write a good pop punk song. Unfortunately, he is more interested in overwriting than,
yeah,
you know. But okay, why I want to talk about the song so bad is that it's like a key part of my music history. Okay,
this is gonna be good.
This is good. It's not like a big story, it's just a moment. So okay, I didn't find Say Anything on the internet. I didn't find them through a friend. I was at the cafeteria, school cafeteria, 9th grade, okay, with the girl I had a crush on. She had spiky hair, like really like spiky hair. And she always wore this like Canadian like tuxedo combo, jean jacket and jeans. I was just like totally crazy for her. And I like got a lot of my music from this girl at the time. She introduced me to System of a Down. She introduced me to Death Cab for Cutie. She introduced me to Say Anything. So I first heard this song at a cafeteria table in the front of the room. I distinctly remember the front of the room. She had her iPod or whatever, and she was like, hey, do you want to listen to some music with me? And I was like totally crushing on her. I was like, yeah, definitely, yeah, whatever, cool. And she played the song, and we did the double earbud thing, total double earbud action, bro. Just
like single earbud action.
Yeah, like one in the right, one in the left, you know what I'm saying? She's listening to one side of the truck, I'm listening to the other. High five up top. High five.
I'm reaching.
I can't. You're too tall.
I can't.
But yeah, so like I listened to this and I thought this was the most sexual experience I had ever had up to that point.
Wow.
Listening to this song in the damn school cafeteria while school is in session. I was like, I can't believe this is happening right now. This is crazy. So this was like a sex moment for me, this song. Yeah.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Whenever the chorus says, I laughed myself to sleep, like, did he play a trick on her?
He did a fun prank.
I did a fun prank.
turns out it was a normal talk, but I was jerking off the whole time. Just a fun prank.
Also, I don't know that I've ever heard someone use the line, I'd be chatting on the interweb, in the way that it comes across here.
On the interweb! That, you mean like that?
I'd be chatting on the interweb.
And then he follows it up with the line, maggots prey upon the living dead, which is so confusing.
Dad.
Okay, so it's also like worth noting that at the time, like, I thought sex was like bad. Like, I was very Catholic.
Right.
So the idea that I was listening to an artist who every time I talk about sex, it was like dark and weird, was like totally my jam. I was like, I know, it's so, like, this is just the dark history of humanity, is that we have sex out of wedlock. Like, I was total straight edge like that. Wow. So, like, just fed into it.
So you were laughing along with them, and, like, this crazy girl trying to get sexual.
Yeah, it's like, oh, my God, like, what is going on here? You just feeding into it. Also, it cracks me up listening to this now that he specifies that the pillow is under his head. It's like totally amazing detail.
As opposed to like over his head.
Just doesn't make any sense.
I also question the title of the song. It feels like he's speaking to someone. Like he heard a song and was like, wow, I can get sexual too. Or like someone called him out for not being something.
Yeah, I'm almost positive I read an interview where he said that his songs didn't have enough sexuality in them and that modern pop is all about sex. So he said, wow, I can get sexual too. Here's a song where I sleep on a pillow.
Wait, he sleeps on a what?
A pillow. Don't do this
a
to
pillow?
Me. That's how I say it, man. I don't know.
All right.
I have one last note for the song.
Okay.
It brings it full circle. In college, you remember the girl I dated in college before senior year?
Yes.
So one time we were at the local bar. It was a fun hangout for a lot of people in our class. And I put on this song on the jukebox. And her friends approached me. My girlfriend's friends approached me and said, oh, my God, did you just play the song? And I said, yeah, it's pretty good, right? And then they started laughing at my face. Like, oh, it brings back fun high school memories. That's hilarious.
You funny guy.
Yeah, I have a warm spot in my heart for this song still.
It's got a classic feel. I think it's a bit rough around the edges, but it's kind of cute.
Yes.
And well, let's get into the album then here. Okay. We got to talk about the spoken word introduction. We have to record the spoken word introduction to the record.
Right.
It's only a few lines, but I'm having anxiety about it.
Why play it? Why don't you just play the
it goes, goes,
oh, you have it memorized? Oh, okay, you don't have to read it.
And the record begins with a song of rebellion.
Mark, that sucks. That sucks so hard. I hate it. Like, Belt itself, I think, is pretty solid and has some great moments. But the fact that I have to get through that 30-second intro to get to the song every time I want to listen to this song is just a bit too much for me to bear.
Yeah. I'm there with you.
Oh, man. Like, all of the, like... The sensors inside of me that says, like, silence the emo voices. We don't want you to hear any more from these whiny dudes. And then that is the first thing I hear from this thing. It's like everything I can do to just not hit the stop button, I'll be honest.
You know what, man? I totally get it. I completely get where you're coming from.
Like, what is that supposed to say? Like, I'm having anxiety about it? Like, what? Recording it? About saying it? Because you know it's terrible? Like, I don't understand.
I'm having trouble being this annoying.
Also,
publicly.
How is he? Why is he recording this? Where is? Are they in the car? It sounds like a turn signal at one point. Going.
Yeah,
off.
It is. Do you want to know the real answer?
Oh no, but yes.
I can tell you everything. Okay,
you
so
monster.
There's two narratives running through this album, and I think you can separate them into how Max Bemis could have made a great album for everyone, and why it ended up being a great album for lonely weirdos like me in high school.
And Max Bemis.
Yes. So. This was recorded in the car with his dad. He's talking to his dad. The two
that makes it worse. I thought it was his brother. Oh,
right. So the through line. Wait, why does that make it worse if it was not his brother?
Because at least his brother is kind of like, you know, whatever. But he's talking to his dad, and his dad's garbage. Oh. And
why is his dad garbage?
I don't know.
I think that's a weird claim.
Well, he says like that's it. Like really?
Well, yes, that's the thing.
He's the voice of the audience in this case, thinking like, really, that's it?
I'm genuinely curious, Charlie. Did you pick up that this was a concept album? That it was a narrative album?
No, sure
okay.
didn't.
Okay, that's important because he initially wrote this is going to be good. Okay, he initially wrote this album under the guise of it being a concept album about a person. You're going to hate this. I love that you're going to hate this. A person, a songwriter, who was considered the greatest emo songwriter in the world, but the problem was he had a curse where he can only tell the raw truth about his life that affected all his relationships. So, the track...
Wait, that's the story?
That's the story, but he's then he gave up. He didn't write the concept album, so only half of the songs are in the plot. So the other half is about his real life where he has anxiety, because he actually does suffer from... So he's like, he does take medication. He has mental health issues, which I think is where, whenever he leans into that is when I start to believe him now. But the other stuff is where I think it gets into trouble. You like that? Are you a fan?
Just trying to digest it.
Yeah.
It's like he's, I'm going to write a story about the greatest emo songwriter ever, and then realizes he's not the greatest songwriter ever. Like, oh, crap. I thought I was, you guys.
Yeah. All the songs, too, that are part of the concept album are the ones that are, like, not so good. Like
which ones? Like, tell me.
Every Man Needs a Molly. Because, like, that was the thing. It's a love story where he falls in love with a girl, but then he just keeps talking blatantly about their sex life. She gets upset and leaves him.
Yeah, he's a jerk.
That's why he brings up Molly Connolly. That's why there's a named character named Molly Connolly who ruins his life. I thought the world should know. Like, he says explicitly in the song, she breaks up with him for, quote, the revealing nature of the songs.
It's kind of meta.
Not, like, in the most intellectually vapid way, yes.
Putting myself in Molly's shoes, I would hate that.
Yeah.
It's like Taylor Swift, but less, like, artistic. I don't know.
Yeah, that's funny.
At least she, you know, like, John Mayer, like, has a thing with her, and then she writes the song Dear John, and it kind of makes sense. But Molly Connolly just broke up with me.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, the fact that it's half finished is so painful. Like, some of the songs are in it and some aren't.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
But I'm trying to find the positives, you know, because I definitely enjoy it. You know, I don't really have a lot of issues. Once you get past sort of the overwriting and the vocal performance, the instrumentation is quite good. And I'm surprised at the variety inside of the album. There's a wide variety of tempos and styles and lots of influence from other previous genres and songs in here. I think the one that I'm drawn to probably most, which is probably not a surprise, is Alive with the Glory of Love. I think that thing is a monster single that was pushed out. It's great. It's got sort of a retro opening and a great little guitar riff built on a solid chord structure that just feels classic. Feels great.
Totally. And very, like, high school friendly sexuality. Like, I want to do you where you're standing. There's something kind of, like, gentle and sweethearted about it, even though it's somewhat like dirty for a sort of high school appealing song. Really great guitar work. One thing I can't stop loving is I think just he does have an ability to write some great riffs. And Alive with the Glory of Love has some, it's a great solo in it, a really great riff to hang your hat on. Yeah, it's also one of the only songs in the album where he is singing about something he's passionately happy about, which maybe is also what you're picking up on.
Yeah, you know I'm all about those no bummers.
Right. Quick note on Belt, though, just to throw this out there about Belt. There was a period of time where I was with you, I couldn't listen to Belt. Like, I had to skip it every time.
Because of that opening?
No, it was because that girl I had a crush on broke up with me, and I asked her why, and she said, because I have to be alone for myself. And of course, the crux of the song is, this is something I have to do for myself. And I thought, no, this is too painful. I can't listen to Belt anymore.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I will say, once you get into the crux of the song, I think Belt is really solid.
Yeah. Even I hate the metaphor. I think it's a bad metaphor.
Yeah.
just belt being like this thing he inherited, and it's now like being sold. It's just clumsy and awkward and doesn't make any sense. So, okay, I'm going to be honest with you. My feeling with this whole album is I have a great time listening to it for memory's sake. Like, I truly don't have that much to say about the album. Like, it does what it does the whole time. Like I said, the guitar works great. Max Bemis gets in the way. There's not that much, like, to dive into in the album. Would you agree?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it moves pretty quickly. I'm not held down by any specific song. Question for you. Maybe you would know this. On Yellow Cat / Red Cat.
Ooh, yep.
There is a female vocalist in the back half of the song. Is that Hayley Williams?
She collaborated him later on his double LP that followed this, but I am 80% sure that's not her, although I could be wrong.
Okay, because let me try to pull up her performance here. To me, it sounded quite a bit like her.
Okay.
It to me sounds very much like All We Know Is Falling era Paramore there.
Right. I hear you. I don't think it's her, but it could be.
Yeah. I do know it's just the style of the song too.
Right. What do you think about that song, by the way?
It's emotional. I think that's a spot actually where the lyrics work for me.
Yes.
That it's not overwritten, that he is focused on telling a story that is very emotional and personal. And I buy it. I think it works really well.
Yeah, I think it's one of the only songs in which, A, he's doing something really new musically that doesn't appear in the rest of the album, and B, where he's actually self-effacing. There's a lot of, like, aesthetic self-effacing, where he's just like, oh, I do my hair weird. But, like, no one believes that he's actually making fun of himself. He's still talking himself up. I think Yellow Cat / Red Cat is where he's actually talking about, my friends quote Pulp Fiction at me, and sometimes I feel like a loser, and I love them, but I don't think they're going to go anywhere, and I worry, like... I think there's real feelings in this. And listening to it now, I'm totally on board. There's a lyric where he talks about a friend that feeds him quotes like a lonely goat that, like, still... I have friends where I still, like, apply that to. That still feels like it makes sense to me.
That's good. My favorite verse on here is the one that says, I watch my neighbor's son play with his shotgun in the street, which is just a great image, like, to open things up. I think I'll blaze all day and marvel at the massive food I eat. It's strange. I'm skinny when I'm standing, but I'm Buddha when I sit. Oh. If I'm truly so enlightened, why'd I waste your time on it?
My heart gives having the flutters because I have always been a little chubby, and that lyric always got me every time, where it's just like
it's good.
So
it's good writing.
Chubby. Yeah.
It's really specific, really image-driven.
And
like
not self-aggrandizing.
Right. It's not about, we'll talk about Admit It in a little bit, but there's a lot of lyrics inside of that thing. This
I could
is
quote
a spot
Admit It lyric by lyric to you, probably.
Well,
if I wanted, I could do that to you.
I don't want you to do that, so please don't.
Okay, can I talk to you, though, like, lyrics that blew my mind as a kid, like, totally, like, I was... in awe. Like, I thought Max Bemis was the writer of our era. Like no, he knows our generation. Like, you don't know. Like, obsessed. He was this, like, genius auteur music writer. The track Whoa.
Yeah. Which,
I don't know how you feel about Whoa. How do you feel about Whoa?
I like it a lot. I think it's a good one.
I agree. But he has that lyric where he's talking about he hooks up with a girl who she took pity on me horizontally, but most likely because of my band. When I was a kid, that blew my damn mind. Like, I listened to that song, like, man, he's the smartest man who ever wrote a song. Because they had sex horizontally.
Oh!
She took pity on me horizontally, but most likely because of my band. She doesn't even like him. She just likes that he's famous. And then he goes on, that's all I can get because I'm lonely, and these visions of death seem to own me. And I can just keep quoting lyrics from there. I won't. But I'm just saying at the time, man, nothing got me going like that.
Yeah, let's play a little bit of Woe, huh?
Okay.
Together to form a makeshift. militia, militia, and burrowed bloodily through my tongue and my teeth. And I stood proud in the gallery.
It's interesting you get that kind of like Sunshine California pop juxtaposed with the darker lyrics.
Yeah, and you know, that song is obviously annoying. Like, I would never say that there's parts of that. Like, his talking about the scene is so, it's cringy. But like, burrowing bloodily in his mouth, like, he has an ability as a writer that I still think is
sure.
There.
The United States of Woe. Whoa.
Right, that's not as fun. For
sure. We live with woe.
Okay, but she took pity on me horizontally. I stand by that. That's an amazing lyric. No question.
He loves to say the word woe, I noticed. Really,
he really likes
emphasize
it.
The word. Whoa! It's like, not quite a Prince thing, but... You know.
Yeah. Okay. Also, there's I never realized this until just now, but this album introduced me to a lot of more complex cultural and political concepts that I wasn't familiar with at the time. Like, I literally, when I was 14, I didn't know about anxiety. Like, I didn't know that could be something you suffered from, not just something you felt occasionally. This album introduced me to that concept. And there's like, he uses the word plutocrat in the song Whoa, and I never had heard that word before. Like, I wasn't introduced to what a plutocrat was. At the time, I thought he was saying blutocrat because I had so little idea. And there's
You idiot.
I know. Such an idiot. But I'm just saying, like, this was, like, educational for me. Like, listening to this album, I was introduced to concepts that I was unfamiliar with that I learned from. So it's like that James Murphy thing. Whenever he talked about in an interview why he read Gravity's Rainbow, he's like, I read it to be pretentious and say that I read it, which is not a good reason to do it, but who cares? Because at the end of the day, I had to be exposed to Gravity's Rainbow, and I learned from that as a person. And I kind of feel like that about Is a Real Boy now, where it's like, sure, it's pretentious and it's emo and it's kind of funny and dated, but it taught me some things I wouldn't have learned otherwise. So I kind of value my experience with it.
Of course. Yeah, it's a formative experience.
Yes.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we got to talk about Admit It.
Already? Are you sure? Okay.
When we first got together, you know, when I first met you back in the days of our college existence, we did a music swap.
Yes.
And
can't believe this happened. I gave you this song.
Yes. Of
That's
course.
Hilarious. Okay.
Got a great selection of stuff from you, of a variety of styles. You were the person that got me into Kanye West. You were the person that exposed me to a lot of other indie stuff on the scene.
Right.
I just was not engaging with. It really was like a catalyst that unlocked a bunch of music appreciation inside of me. I think, owe you a lot for that swap.
Hell yeah.
And this song, Admit It, was one of the songs that came over in the swap. And I remember thinking, And I still kind of feel that way now.
Right.
And I've spent more time with it since, and I think I kind of get what the song is going for, but...
Right.
You want to talk about, like, coming across as just, like, the biggest pretentious emo just idiot that just keeps writing all of this stuff and then gets, like, your gang of vocalists to be like, yeah, admit it! Genius says it is a half satirical, half painfully literal song, emphasis on painfully, addressed to today's hipsters. I think we gotta let it speak for itself here, Mark.
Yes, please do.
Oh man. We should say that the title has 3 exclamation points in it, so.
Pseudo-bohemian appearance and vaguely leftist doctrinal belief.
I want to shut it off right there. I don't even want
really?
To give it another chance. I hate everything about what he says. The
okay.
way he says it, the cadence, the people saying admit it. I hate it. I hate it. Hate it. Hate it.
I can see that now. I couldn't before, but I understand now. Can I tell you something, though?
Yes.
Listening to this now, I realized, like, doing some self-reflection, I have a list of things I learned from the song I never heard before. Because I grew up in a small town in the middle of nowhere. Like, I wasn't exposed to a lot of culture. So just, like, real quick, like, I'm going to just list why I like the song then. Just real quick for you.
Okay.
I had never heard the word hipster before. I never heard the word bohemian or leftist or postmodern or competitive capitalist dogma or, like...
You love that.
Are you kidding me? I love it. I still love it. It makes you a slave to the competitive capitalist dogma you spend your whole every waking moment of your life bitching about. Of course I love it. And, like, at the time, like, I was the target market. Like, I was listening to this song. This was my favorite song for years, by the way.
Yep.
I probably listened to the song more in high school than any other song by any other artist.
That's insane.
I loved it. It, like, defined me. And I think it's because there is... I understand it's pretentious now, but at the time, I had so little intellectualism to explore. So, like, listening to the song where he is just, like, prescribing truths, like, the idea that there's some people who listen to music who find themselves superior to others or who find themselves culturally superior to others because they're into the trends, like, I really like attached itself to me. And just to get into, like, a personal thing really quick is that generally as a person I suffer from a lot of anxiety and self-doubt, and like, I was suffering from depression and had no idea at the time. And because I was so susceptible to this song, we can criticize it and it's fine. Like, that's not weird for me. But at the time, listening to what this song builds to is just this whole, like, tirade that's, like, silly, but has all these words I didn't know. And feeling, like, assaulted, intellectually. And then to end in, like, I'll be okay. All I need is my car and my guitar. Mm-hmm. Like, that self-acceptance. I don't think any song hit me like that at the time. Like, listening to it now, I still get a little charge out of it.
Yeah, well, and I'll say, you know, like, I think the song opens awfully, but then builds to a conclusion that is, I agree, uplifting. And there's a good nugget of a song inside of this thing.
Yeah, because he's being clear about, like, why I'm this bitter guy is because I feel hurt. Like, I'm vulnerable to the people who are cooler than me. And the idea that he could do it no matter what, even with all these people, like, man, nothing got me going like that. I have to tell you what.
Yeah.
Do you at least find... Okay, you're probably going to say no. But do you at least find the kind of unconventional use of the guitar kind of interesting? Like, it's not a usual pop punk song structurally.
Sure. I don't know. I think the lyrics are really distracting, and it's hard for me to focus on much of anything else besides of what he's saying, because he's saying so much.
Right. He's saying a lot.
I think where it gets maybe even worse, aside from the very beginning, by leading off with that line, despite your pseudo-bohemian appearance
and vaguely leftist doctrinal beliefs, you know nothing about our sex, that you can read any trendy New York Underground fashion magazine.
Hate it. Where I think it gets also bad is in the middle portion where he switches to himself and says...
Well, let me tell you this. Yep. I am shamelessly self-involved. Yep. I spend hours in front of the mirror making my hair elegantly disheveled.
Hate it. I worry about how
this album will sell.
Because I believe the amount of sex I will have in the future. Hate it. Oh, I hate it. The way he emphasizes all of the wrong words and the way he pronounces them just makes me want to yank my earballs out.
You're a faker.
You are a faker! You're living a lie! Living a lie!
Oh, man. I love this song still. I can't help it. I can't objectively review this album, Charlie. Like, this was so deeply in my heart as a 14-year-old. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I understand. Everything you're saying makes perfect sense, but right. I just can't let go of it.
It's no Black Parade for me, Mark, but I had an okay time.
I trust you. I believe you're more correct than I am.
Okay. When it comes to Say Anything, is this their peak? I mean, again, you're not objective here, but...
Right. So, definitely. But also, I think it's worth noting that some of the singles and their follow-up in defense of the genre, actually, he took vocal, like, coach lessons. Objectively, musically, he improved. The production's better. He relies less heavily on the crowd punk vocals thing. And I think as an album, it's not as good, but there are highlights on it that I actually do think are just work as rock songs. And then he had like a weird, interesting revival with the album Hebrews, where he talks about his Jewish heritage, that are still immature and difficult to listen to at times, but I think demonstrate that he has the capacity to grow. He's just kind of choosing not to, as a lyricist at least. So there's more, but this is the big highlight for sure.
Okay. Well, I will tell you that I am going to take 3 songs on my highlight reel.
Wow, you're taking 3? I'm impressed.
Yeah. I'm going to take Yellow Cat / Red Cat. I'm going to take Whoa. I'm going to take Alive with the Glory of Love.
Okay. Wow. Interesting. Is it worth me picking songs?
Of course. Pick 6.
So? Why 6?
I mean, you love this thing so much. I feel like you got to go for it.
Okay. If this was high school, I'd pick every song. So I'm going to try my perspective now, like coming back to it.
Okay.
I'm just going to say the songs that stick out to me as something that's worth listening to outside of my memory with a song. I think Whoa is an interesting song generally. It's kind of cringy though. Alive with the Glory of Love, I think genuinely holds up.
Yeah.
I think Yellow Cat / Red Cat holds up. And despite the fact that it's the most directly emo song,
despite its
pseudo
bohemian appearance,
and then vaguely left us soccer release, I think Chia Like I Shall Grow is where he gets in the way of himself, in the way of his own music, the least. I think there's an interesting synth part. I think the guitar works pretty well, and I think it's a kind of a complicated pop punk song, and there's not a lot of those, so I might grab that.
Okay, cool.
Can I just go through a couple notes here? Do we have time for that?
Of course, of course.
Okay,
we got all the time in the world.
Oh, James Bond.
Of course,
we have
my favorite
all
movie.
The time. Okay. Nerd joke for James Bond fans. Okay, so Writhe. I'm just going to go through all the notes I wrote because I had a moment. Writhe, I never knew as a kid that this was about a paid sexual encounter.
Never. Probably because you turn it off in that your brain and you're like, I can't think about it.
Exactly. The idea of writhing as sex, something like that makes sex seem weird and uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable with sex, so it totally worked on me. Alive with the Glory of Love. So I made a mixtape with this song because my high school girlfriend wasn't allowed to see me because I had passed a suggestive note to her. That her parents found.
Oh, no.
Or I talked about maybe going to my dad's apartment. That's like she didn't. Okay, so her parents found it. She wasn't allowed to see me. So I made her a mixtape with Alive with the Glory of Love, which is about two lovers who are separated. And I said, this is us, dude. Like, this is our experience.
And they send us to those separate work camps.
Yeah. I won't doubt you with the passing of time. There's no question. It was also my summer jam that year, for sure.
Cool.
The Feudal, used to listen to that in my room when I was mad. The part where he talks about rat poison for dinner blew my goddamn mind. Spider Song I really liked. And Orgy of Critics is really interesting. I used to listen to it when I played Amp 3. Like, I made an Amp 3 playlist with like 10 songs, and like this is the one I listened to a lot.
Awesome.
Slowly Through a Vector for me was like the intellectual song in the album, so I used to like put it on and like make notes and try to figure out what he
drew. Oh my god. Just imagine like little like baby teenage Mark like studiously studying his Say Anything album.
We're passing slow. What does he mean by that?
Slowly Through a Vector. Ooh, a vector. Physics.
Yeah, I didn't know what a vector was. Admit It. So this is like the big one. This was my favorite song. So I had a MySpace page, as we all did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my About Me was the lyrics to the song.
Was Admit It?
Yeah, the whole lyrics, the entire song. Oh my god. So I put that on my MySpace as my About Me, like, this defines me, Admit It. And then a girl I knew through a friend in high school contacted me to tell me like how good the song is and like how cool it was that I was like complex enough to like understand what the song really meant. And I distinctly remember getting that message like an idiot, and I go, if this girl thinks she can pick me up because of Admit It, she can't. I know more than she does about it.
Oh no, Mark.
It's true.
Oh no.
Yeah. Also, I felt really sophisticated because the song was over 6 minutes, and I thought that made me smarter than other people that I liked it. And I think it was a good song to listen to because I was in a small town that didn't know how to escape. Yada, yada, yada. It was like my escape.
You got it.
And last one, the track Little Girls, which is on the EP. You probably didn't listen to it, right?
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Did you like that one?
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, I can see that. At the time, it was considered like the artsy choice because there's this girl who was like really like the very attractive like scene kid at the time. We met up in a Borders, like we ran into her, me and a friend, and she saw me like trying to buy In Defense of the Genre, and she was like, "Oh, you like Say Anything?" I was like, "Yeah, totally. He's a genius." And she was just like, "You know, the song Little Girls is his true masterpiece," and like broke down why that was the case. And I remember feeling so much respect for her. Like, I felt like I would never know as much as she did. You remember Borders?
Of course, yeah.
I spent a lot of time in Borders.
Was like, because of that girl?
No, just because I was a teenager and there was a mall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never hung out at the mall as a teenager.
Really?
No, never did.
Wow.
Probably because our local mall was like a ghost town. Not to quote Modest Mouse on that one, but...
Right.
It was really abandoned. No one went there for anything.
I started a relationship that began at a Borders. Like, we had our first kiss in a Borders.
Oh, my God.
Seriously.
You nerd.
Yep.
You love this album, man.
It's a warm memory, for sure.
That's good. Well, let's segue to a little warm memory from my life.
Woo!
Vampire Weekend's second album, Contra. So I chose this album, Mark, because this is one of the first CDs I can remember going out and buying myself.
Wow.
At that point, I had started a minimum wage job. I was working my way up, you know, almost done with high school. And it was January 2010, I can remember.
Yeah.
At that point, I had been a big fan of Vampire Weekend. That first album came out a couple years prior. And me and my buddies jammed to all the singles off that thing. A-Punk and Oxford Comma and Cape Cod Kwasa Kwasa. All the stuff on there. Kids Don't Stand a Chance. Loved the crap out of that album. Like, it's, we all had our different musical tastes inside of the group of friends. And there was like five of us there. But, like, that was one album at the time, like, we all agreed on was, like, just great. Like, throw that thing on. We're going to love it. So, I can remember seeing Vampire Weekend on SNL at one point before I had listened to any other stuff. I was like, these guys sound really cool. I want to check them out and explore their music. Because, again, at the time, as a young teenager, I was thinking, like, oh, SNL gets all the cool guys. Like, I want to be cool, like, who's on TV there. But then when I saw, like, oh, and I'm doing more research on Vampire Weekend and they're dropping a new album, I'm like, I got to be on top of that because not everyone is talking about this band in the way that they are, like, I don't know, Taylor Swift or whoever
Soulja else.
Soulja Boy. Soulja Boy. I got to be ahead of the curve on this one to really show my indie cred. So I can remember going to Target and picking up this album on CD. And
wow.
That was kind of the launch point. You know, I did buy a lot of CDs. In my late high school, early college career, just because I can remember having, there was a teacher that I was showcasing some music on the iPod that I had. And at the time, I was just buying single songs off of iTunes.
Yep.
Because like most folks did, you know, that was not an uncommon thing for people to do. But right. What the teacher said, like, oh, man, I'm so sick of people just buying individual songs. You teenagers buying your individual songs on iTunes, you're not understanding the album, right? You got to understand the album tells a story. And it's important to know the song in the album. And if you like that one song, you probably like the other songs on the album too. And I was like, you know, hey, that really stuck with me. And I really want to give that a shot. So from then on, I decided no more single songs. If I was going to listen to a song, I was going to listen to the entire album. So I picked up Contra and threw it on and was immediately fascinated because I was like, this is the Vampire Weekend I know, but it's also radically different from the sound of the last album.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know if you've noticed how different sounding Contra is to the previous work.
Dude, I'm going to tell you what. I have a similar story. It's worth noting I'm like slightly older than you.
Just a bit.
Yeah. I got out of high school a year before you. So this was my freshman college album. Like, I listened to this nonstop my freshman year of college.
Yeah.
And listening to this now, I maintain this is one of the greatest like pop albums of the decade, whatever you want to call like bohemian pop or whatever you call them. Contra is amazing. And at the time, I had already listened to the self-titled in high school. My senior year, it was like discovering indie and stuff like that. But listening to this in college, it felt so much more complex, so much more like challenging and weird, like different. And I have so many memories of listening to tracks on Contra. I had moved from the tiny town to the big city, and I was walking around, and it was snowing, and I was listening to Diplomat's Son, and I was having the time of my life. Yeah, so I definitely picked up on the differences there. It felt like newer and smarter and fresher.
I think that first album is great. You know, it's my favorite Vampire Weekend album front to back, but it is definitely a singular sound, you know. All of the songs on there are kind of cut from the same cloth. This thing, you are oscillating wildly from one vibe to the next. You're opening up on like a low-key chilly beach into some like synth soundscape, into a quick up-tempo little jam. You got Taxi Cab and Run, which are more slower emotional tracks, but it's all kind of backed by their world influences. They're starting to put sampling on this album. The Vampire Weekend crew has always been a fan of hip hop, but I think we're starting to see more of that influence on their production side of things here. Every one of these songs is just so unique, and I don't know that I fully appreciated this album at the time, and I think it's maybe still my least favorite Vampire Weekend album, but there are some moments of really gorgeous musical qualities. I don't know what I'm saying. The post-chorus bit on Run, or the final verse in Diplomat's Son, or the chorus of White Sky, that sounds unlike anything else. Not just like in music, but also in Vampire Weekend. Like, they don't sound like this anywhere else either.
Yeah, totally. I like the really elegant use of synths, which is like so. I've never heard a musician use synthesizers like Vampire Weekend does in this album. It is so minimal, and it calls so much attention to itself, and it's just out of there. And there's a gorgeous string section waiting, like falling in the rafters. Like there's nothing that quite sounds like this. I still am like blown away by how singular and what a journey this is. Like, every track on this thing, I think, is incredible. I don't think there's a single missed moment on this album.
Sure. No, I definitely appreciate every track now, and more so than I think I even did as a kid. This is definitely a winter album for me. You know, it came out in the middle of January. Everything in the wintertime I associate with this. The self-title is definitely more fall. The Modern Vampires feels a bit more late spring into early summer, but this is in the middle of winter. And I can remember vividly like having to clear off the driveway and shovel the snow away while listening to this album as the snow is falling down. Like, a really strong memory of those two things happening at the same time.
Yeah. The same for me. Like, I don't think I could have stumbled upon a better album. I bought it when it came out because I was just fascinated with that first album. And like going to a city from like a tiny like a parking lot of a town, and then this song being like what transitioned me from one stage of life to another. Like, you couldn't choose a better album, and it was during the winter. So like, whenever I was getting comfortable there, so it was like really colored a part of my life for sure.
Yeah.
I relate to that.
I was also involved in a relationship with a lady at the time. I got to set this one up. This is a good story. So when we talked last, two times ago actually, about Rise Against, I brought up how I used Rise Against to help me get through a breakup.
That you broke up.
I it gave me the courage to break up with a girl.
Right.
So at this point now, we're like a year past that, right? So it's like 2010. Uh-huh. I'm more mature. And there was a girl that I had been crushing on since like middle school. Like,
right.
Totally like mythologized her in my mind and said there is no way, she is unattainable. She is like so far above what I could possibly do. If only I could just find a way to get a relationship with this girl, I would be so happy. And was like seriously lovesick for like the next 6 months after dumping the other girl. Just kind of like waiting around like, oh my God, when is this thing going to happen? I feel like something's there, but I don't know what to do about it.
Right.
It's funny how fast you move into those kinds of things as a teenager. You're like, now a year goes by and I'm like, oh, nothing really changed. But, you know, you only were in high school for 4 years and like all the events that took place in those 4 years and how monumental they all were. Like, it's crazy to think how fast and the time goes. But so this unattainable girl, finally, we're both in the marching band together and we're out on a trip and like she's making a move on me. And I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe this. This is amazing. And sure enough, something strikes up between us. We spend that whole summer doing stuff into the next year. It's going great. I'm like, oh, my God, this is fantastic. And finally, you know, the winter comes around and, you know, January is tough to get through for a lot of reasons. But at some point I realized that this girl was not at all what my mind had built her up to be, that I had mythologized her so completely that
wow.
Her person didn't have anything in common with me. Like, we didn't have fun together. It wasn't enjoyable for me to spend time with her. It felt like a chore. And realizing that was like a lightning bolt to my worldview, because I had spent the previous, like, seriously 3 or 4 years setting this thing up, and now all of the evidence I was taking in was saying that was wrong, and I had been lying to myself.
Wow.
And I can remember having this realization. We went to all-night bowling because every year in January, the marching band would have a banquet, and then we would go to all-night bowling after the banquet. And I can remember the 1 year it was snowing so much. Like, it was crazy. And we were like, we probably shouldn't go. But then it was like, well, as long as we get there, we'll be safe inside the building, so we'll at least get there and go for it. So we show up. And the girl wants me to spend time with her that night, obviously. And I'm just like, I don't want to do any of this. So I can remember just like blowing her off.
Oh,
and
no.
Just like listening to this album constantly. And I was bouncing back and forth between this album, which I had just bought, and also Serge Tankian's Elect the Dead.
Oh, my God.
So I'm getting a little bit of horchata. I'm getting a little bit of Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. You know, mixing and matching a little bit of my feelings. But I think that sentiment is really good, because the feelings that I get on a track like Taxi Cab, where someone
right.
has a realization that the relationship that they're in is not what they thought it was and that it's a sham and they are someone different than the person that they're dating, that mood fits perfectly. And the mood, the atmosphere of that song with those quiet strings in the background and the gorgeous piano riff that plays, it reminds me of that snow falling outside of that bowling alley. And I was just like, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. I can't continue to do this.
Why are all your stories about leaving someone?
I don't know.
And all of my stories are about being desperate for someone. What is happening there?
I made a promise with my friend in, like, middle school that we said if we ever get girlfriends, we will never, ever break up with them. Because why would anyone do that? That's crazy.
Well, that's a strange promise, Charlie. I have to be honest with you.
Clearly, I couldn't hold up my end of the bargain.
Yeah, no kidding, because that's a crazy thing to promise.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, in middle school, I once promised a friend named Joe... I actually had a few friends named Joe. It's probably not the one you're thinking of.
It's not the Joe I know?
It's not the Joe you know.
Aww.
It's the Joe you don't know.
it's
the Joe
story.
You don't hear. It's the Joes he doesn't play. Yeah, I promised a guy named Joe, who was good at karate, that, like, this whole girl thing is bullshit, right? We both agreed. And then just, I remember meeting up with him in seventh grade. And, like, he was totally into the girl thing. And I was like, this sucker. But then I fell for it. Because girls are pretty good.
Girls are pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, talk to me about your thoughts on this album, Mark. Where do you love this thing? What stands out to you?
Like, this was so refreshing to listen to because I have no slow moment. And what's fun about revisiting it is I forget how kind of quietly beautiful it is. I remember the sort of like radical pop sensibilities of Vampire Weekend being like this so obviously bougie thing that's still likable and charming. But I forget that like at the end of Horchata, which is like kind of a fun, kind of funny bougie track, at the end of it, it's kind of elegant. It's kind of beautiful and you kind of fall for it. And like you brought up Run earlier, that's a gorgeous song. In the way it ends, it's so directly poppy, but it's so complex. And Taxi Cab is such a quiet moment. I dig everything in this. The only song that I kind of bounce off of a little bit is Holiday because it was overplayed in commercials for years.
Yeah, I love it though. I love how short it is.
No, it's great. It's an amazing song.
So tight.
Sure. But do you agree that we had to hear that forever? Like yeah. that got to be a bit much.
There was a great bit on the Colbert Report back in the day whenever they had the Black Keys on and Vampire Weekend and they had the brand off and they were like, Black Keys, we'll raise you Jesus. Mazda, and they cut to a commercial, whoa, oh, oh, I got love to keep me waiting. And they're like, Mazda, psh, yeah, try BMW. Holiday, oh, holiday.
Holiday.
And it keeps cutting back and forth of them showing who has got the better commercial with their song in it, which I thought was really funny.
Funny, but also awful. Corporate hellscape, let's be honest.
Corporate hellscape.
this thing is gorgeous. I love it. I love
that
every
there
moment.
There is no chorus in White Sky. It's just him vocalizing. In falsetto, I love how schizophrenic California English feels. I love how weird Cousins gets and that like banging bell at the very end. Do 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 do. I love it, and I think the closer is perfect. I think Contra. Your Contra is maybe one of my favorite Vampire Weekend songs.
Wow, yeah, that's a really interesting choice.
Yeah,
why is it your favorite?
It's just poetically beautiful. It's so soft, and I don't really know what it means when you say, I think you're a Contra. Like, I don't really know what that is.
Can we have a conversation about that?
Yeah.
Because listening to this now, I thought to myself, well, I never really understood what these lyrics are about. But listening to it now, I really don't understand what these lyrics are about. Like, nothing has changed. I have no idea what he's talking about most of the time.
Well, to Contra, you know, is to go against something, contradict.
Okay.
But if you just use it like a noun like that, I don't know what he means.
Right. Is he talking about the NES video game?
I think you're a Contra. I think you have Contra. I think you play Contra.
Oh, that's cool. I like that person.
This is the Run.
Can I share with you my favorite song from this album?
Of course.
Can you guess what it is?
Let me look at the list. Is it Diplomat Son?
It's Diplomat Son.
Yes.
That was a great guess.
Great choice.
That's impressive. Because I have so many memories attached to it. Like, Diplomat Son was such a moment for me because it was around senior year of high school that I was starting to understand like why people listen to kind of weirder stuff. I was like really opening myself up. Like I was watching old movies or weird movies, listening to weird music, reading weird books. I really wanted to learn and explore different spaces. And I remember being so taken with a song when I was in my freshman year of college. And it was like a brutal winter that year. And I just remember, like, this song was like my theme song for a whole year. It was just filled with these spaces I didn't quite understand. It didn't sound like anything else. It changes time signatures really frequently. It's unclear exactly what I'm meant to be getting out of the lyrics of the song.
That's long, too.
It's long, it's and meandering. It's kind of ironic. It's there's something about it that's like sort of funny, in a way that feels detached. But I just remember walking through like the crowded city streets while the snow was falling, like to the library to the song. And I actually specifically have a memory of listening to Diplomat's Son, and like, you know, when you go to your freshman year of college, like you start to realize like, oh, dating pools are different in college than high school, aren't they? It's not just people who are near you. It's people who have interests that are similar to you and also are kind of progressive. I remember walking to my dorm and running into a girl I had a class with and then like trying to figure out what flirting was outside of high school. Like, not in a way that I was trying to make anything happen, but I remember this was, like, playing in one earbud as we were talking on the street, and she was smoking a cigarette. And I was, like, trying to realize, like, oh, like, everything's different now. Like, people are interesting all of a sudden. It's not just, like, whatever you happen to be the closest to. Like, proximity is your whole ability to make friends. It's suddenly this world where your closeness as intellectuals is what defines your friendship. And I remember listening to this and figuring that out, I guess. But yeah, nothing but love for the song. I still love it. It's great. It's weird. Yeah. It's maybe their weirdest song.
I love it too. It is just peaceful, strangely, and I feel an immense comfort when I listen to it that I don't get from a lot of other songs.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
Can't explain it. I do get it from Soulja Boy's Yeah. I do feel that sense of a sublime.
Yeah,
comfort,
yeah, trick. But, yeah,
right.
I think Giving Up the Gun is the worst song on this album.
I disagree.
Okay. What if you had to cut one from this album, what would it be?
It would be Holiday.
Oh.
If I were for Holiday. I don't know. I get a little tired of Holiday.
It's very Vampire Weekend-y.
Giving Up the Gun is a weak link in that it is so clearly written for the radio, but...
Do, 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 do. Those drums are just a bit much for me.
I have a soft spot for it, though. I think it's a good track.
According to a Twitter session, a Twitter tweet, Rostam has said that whenever he was playing this album for other people before it was released, that he would play it in reverse because he thought the last three songs were his favorite.
Oh.
So I think you're a contra, Diplomat Son, and Giving Up the Gun.
I think those are the most diverse on the album.
Yeah.
So I can get that. Oh. What did Bayo play?
I don't know. Getting back to the Contra, going to Genius, Ezra said to NME, it's a conversation between two people, and they're using the word Contra to say you're the opposite of me. Say you break up with your girlfriend, suddenly you feel like you're a totally different person, but obviously that's not the whole story because at one point you felt very tender towards them. And we have so many signals in our life telling us to make decisions between two things, but it's usually not as simple as that. Some people would say a choice between two things is no choice at all. He also said in the same interview that the title for the album was chosen before writing the song, since it seemed appropriate for a bunch of songs that pointed towards certain dichotomies.
Sure.
So it is not a word, but it's emphasizing the prefix that emphasizes the difference. I am against something.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that speaks to why this album feels like weirdly more complicated than the first one.
Yeah.
Which is something I like about it. But we kind of sit on opposite sides of the fence in a lot of ways, though. I mean, I think every album they release is better than the last. I think the Modern Vampires of the City is their greatest and most complex work.
And you know that I just have issues with stuff like Fingerback.
Which is just crazy. It's crazy that you like the tracks on the first album, which are so fun and poppy, and you don't like it on the third.
Because Fingerback was on the
first album, you would love Fingerback.
Fingerback is just a bad camp song.
No. You listen to that. If that followed A-Punk, you'd be like, what? It's Fingerback. What's wrong with it? You'd love it.
I hate the name, too. I don't know. Something about the combination of those words just doesn't work for me.
What, it makes you feel like breaking fingers or something?
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
I think it's still my least favorite Vampire Weekend album, but every time I go back to it, I find something new that I love inside of it. It's really dense, with ideas and styles, and I love to throw it on and reminisce about the times gone by.
Yeah, I think every Vampire Weekend album is interesting for a different reason. And I think they're more fun to think about sort of in that way, like the way that like they're complicating their aesthetic every time. So for me, Contra is this like first stab at being something other than the Baroque pop band that caught the world by storm because it sounds so different. This is them being like, well, we don't want to just be more of that. We want to do something very different, something that is harder to understand and listen to, or you have to think more about to really get something out of. So yeah, I don't know. It's great. Everything's great. The world is great.
You got some songs with a highlight reel?
This is going to be tough. I'm obviously going to take Diplomat's Son. I have to take Taxi Cab. I'm going to take White Sky. And then I think I'm going to take Run. I honestly thought a lot about this because I kind of want to take everything.
Yeah.
How about you?
It's going to be Holiday, because you're an idiot. Diplomat's Son, White Sky, and I think you're a Contra.
Talk about bad camp songs.
The
best time of the year. If I went for a holiday.
It's the great commercial song you want to hear when you're planning your airfare to your next tropical destination.
I don't know. I can't fall either.
All right. Well, Mark, I think there's just one thing left to do. It is time to discuss what can only be said to be a flash in the pan.
What?
It's SoldierBoyTellem.com.
Oh!
Flashback with me, Mark, to the year 2007. We are in the throes of high school.
Okay.
The doggy days of high school. Do you remember where you were the first time you heard Crank That?
No, of course not.
No, I do.
That. Really?
Yeah. I very clearly remember. I was in my shop class in the ninth grade. It's like a shop class. And every day during fifth period, they would show the announcements, which were projected onto a TV screen in the TV studio. And they always had music over the credits at the very end. And at some point in 2007, this song was put over the end credits. And they always put a thank you in the credits to the person. Thanks to Soulja Boy. And another girl in my class was like, Soulja Boy! And started like dancing in her seat to the song. And everything, thinking like, what is this? What is this? You know? Because it really didn't sound like anything else I had ever heard before.
Sure.
And of course would then go on to become incredibly popular and maybe one of the earliest music memes that I can remember. I don't know. I mean, memes have been around for a while, but I'm trying to think as far as like something that was virally parodied and referenced. This song got a lot of credit because it is, you know, like internet famous. Here's a guy that said, right, I'm going to put an album out online and change the game. And I think as objectively awful as this album is, and let me be clear, it is objectively terrible. It's an important album in the way that like a John Waters album or movie is maybe important.
Wow, that's a deep cut for movies.
I don't know
about that, because
I don't feel the same way like watching Pink Flamingos. I don't feel the same way listening to this album.
I do. Staring into a butthole is the same as listening to Soulja Boy tell
I got me some bathing apes. I got me some bathing. I got me some bathing apes.
No.
Okay, did Soulja Boy start Bathing Apes?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a clothing brand.
Well, I know it's a clothing brand. I know they're called Bapes. I didn't know they're called
Bathing
Apes.
Yeah, that's shorthand. Bathing Apes.
Okay.
And Bapes is like shorthand for it.
I completely get why people think Bapes are cool.
Yeah. I thought it was like a cool name for vapes back in the day.
You thought you knew what vaping was back in the day?
I don't know. I thought Soulja Boy was ahead of his time. He seems the kind of kid that would vape. I don't know.
What, vaping didn't exist? I don't believe you.
I don't know. Is Soulja Boy to blame for our current rap scene?
No, of course not.
I think I want to blame him for our current rap scene.
Okay, why?
There's so much repetition, and you and I don't really talk about stuff ahead of recording, but we've both been listening to this record for a while now, and at one point, you texted me something that said, this thing is so punishing in the way it's recorded, because it's just nonstop repetition. Like, this guy does not have an idea to run with for more than, like, a second at a time. Like, it's the same line just on repeat constantly. Certainly Crank That is the standout single. I don't know that the rest of these tracks ever were meant for audio play.
Consumption.
But stuff like Donk, stuff like Bapes, stuff like She Thirsty, Pass It to A-Rab. It's just constant repetition. There's no structure underneath it. A really simple beat. But I'll say also that, like, it's so bad that at one point it crossed over into Ludacris, and I started laughing and having a really good time with this album. And, like,
really?
Like, I can't believe this thing exists. This is insane.
What point was that for you?
I think it's around Yah. I think it's when Yah comes up.
That's fair.
Because and the version on Spotify is the censored version. They say Yah Trick, and the other one, it's the other one that he says. I can remember this song being viralized at the time, and a close friend of mine, like, brought this up and was saying, like, listen to this guy, this is ridiculous. So for a while there, like, that was something, someone would say something to us and we just respond with, like, Yah Trick.
Really? Wow. I had no idea about any other song from Soulja Boy in high school.
Yes. I definitely knew about this one back in the day, too.
Wow.
Just because, like, it's insane. Like, who would do that?
Nobody. Nobody would. That's why Soulja Boy had to exist. He had to provide the bottom of the barrel for everyone. Everyone to look at the bottom and go, oh, there's Soulja Boy. That's what I'm trying to avoid.
Okay. Let's play a little bit from that.
Hey. Oh my god, so bad right away. But can you stop it? Can you stop it real quick? Like, okay, like right away. Like right away, that is so hard to listen to. That's someone just like dunking away on a keyboard, just like da da da, and then he's just yelling over it, right? Am I crazy?
No, he doesn't have a great voice either. Plus he's like what, 17 at the time too?
Yeah, which is fair. Honestly, I expect... Okay, what I'm mad at is not Soulja Boy. What I'm mad at is the world around Soulja Boy.
Society that accepted
him to do this.
Now, to be fair, like, he has really attempted to remain prescient in our modern society, but does not seem to have a lot of friends in the industry.
You're telling me Kiss You Through the Phone didn't do it for you when he released his follow-up?
No.
Wow, interesting. It was my favorite song.
So in the uncensored version, he says, get out of my face, ho.
Oh, wow, he's hard. You know, I swear to God, and I can speak from experience, that walking through Times Square and having someone trying to hustle their album that isn't very good, that they think they're going to spread their fame by just handing out albums in the middle of Times Square to tourists, that stuff sounds way better than this. This is the bottom of the barrel. I hate to pull this card now, but this is one of the worst albums I have ever heard. I never listened to the full thing, and this is I couldn't listen to more than 5 songs at a time. By the time I got to song 6, I was like, I can't do this. I cannot keep sitting here like this. I can't do this anymore.
It's pretty rough.
It's horrible.
Have I told you that I actually got someone's album from Times Square?
Okay, did you listen to it?
Yeah. It was on another band trip. We went to New York City, and we were walking through Times Square. And one of the guys I was in a group with, he got like grabbed by someone hustling CDs. I was like, buy my album, man. And he's like, I don't have any money. He's like, it'll be $5. So he like just whipped out a $5 bill and gave it to him. So we brought it back, and we popped it in the old stereo player to see what we were into. First off, the CD was like scratched to hell, like all marked up on the front, just awful. But the opening song was a beat that went, "What you know about me, what you know about me," and then it was punctuated by two gunshots, doo doo. And we laughed to that pretty consistently.
Sure. And that guy turned out to be Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. It was actually Questlove of the Roots.
That's crazy. That's right, the least person I can imagine doing that.
Yeah. I think Ya is hilarious.
But it's supposed to be funny though.
But I think it's hilarious because he thinks it's hilarious.
Yeah, but he's trying to make you laugh, man.
Well, he's succeeding.
Yeah, so this is great.
The bit where he goes,
right, like it's a joke song, but it's like the worst repetition of a synth part ever, and it's just him screaming. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
You know how I listen to Ya? I don't know if this is too revealing for the podcast, but I was listening to the album. I got all the way to Ya, and I was basically taking a dump when I listened to it. And I because I walked in the bathroom, I had to poop, and I was listening to this. I can't do this. I had to poop in silence. I couldn't listen to it anymore. It was too bad.
I think there are far worse songs on this album.
But do you agree there's no better way to listen to Ya?
Than sitting on the toilet?
Yeah.
That's a good place to listen to it.
Okay.
How about Pass to Arab?
Oh my god.
So that's the first 20 seconds?
You expect him to have like cut from that within second 5, not second 20.
Nope. I also love that he is Arab, so he's like, I'm going to pass it to me.
Oh my god.
He's just speaking in third person?
Can we... Okay, you know what? I want to just... I know this is really shitty, but could you play intro for me really quick?
Yeah. Nope, not that one. This one.
Wow, you can't. You will.
Same thing we do every day, soldier boy. Try and crank the world.
Okay, let's cut it there. So you know a little bit about audio editing, mm-hmm. right? You could make that.
Right? I think that's the point. I think it's all about the DIY stuff.
That's fine, but the thing about DIY stuff is it's someone individually with very little tools doing something cool with those tools. This is someone who discovered the like repeat like cut paste tool in sound editing software. Right? I know that's terrible because I don't want to come across as anti, you know, make art on the cheap. I don't feel that way, but everything about this album smells, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It smells bad.
Yeah, I think you got to open right up with Crank That.
Yeah. We don't need an intro to Crank That.
No, let it speak for itself.
The worst big single in rap history, maybe. Can you think of a worse one? I can't.
Are we including Black Eyed Peas?
Yes.
I would sooner listen to Crank That than I would listen to I Got a Feeling.
I'm going to sing the national anthem with Fergie before I dive into the song again.
You Soldier Boy tough. Hey, I got this new damn for y'all called the Soldier Boy.
we should break down this opening a little bit here and make sense of what he's saying. First off, that "you" at the beginning, I love. I unironically love the "you."
Okay.
I
hate it.
Okay. And the steel drums, I'm not too bad on either. I think that's kind of fun.
You like when a man puts reverb on his voice and a cell phone MIDI chip plays in the background. That's what you like. That's your aesthetic.
Yes.
Okay.
He then says, Soulja Boy Tell 'Em, which I never understood. Is his name Soulja Boy Tell 'Em?
Yes.
That's a ridiculous name.
It's, you know what? It's a fitting name. Soulja Boy Shut the Hell Up was taken.
On Google, one of the questions that you could ask is Soulja Boy? Question mark. Oh, man. Also known as Soulja Boy, Tell 'Em, Young Draco, or Big Soulja.
No one's called him Big Soulja. He put that on there. That's not true. Can we... Okay. Crank, that's the only thing that people talk about on this album, correct?
Yes.
So, what this was a risque song about a man being, like, weirdly sexually aggressive, like, pranking a girl he's having sex with, and everyone in high school dances thought it was funny. That's what it was. That's what the song is. Mm-hmm. Is there any... Do you have any objections to that analysis?
No.
So this song is gross and terrible, right?
Yes.
Am I crazy?
No.
This song is just the worst. Yo! Like, that is the song. The reason why the song is popular is because people like to make that noise.
Yeah. I kind of like to make that noise.
By a song about owning a sidekick, which is crazy.
Call it Paul. Man, just hit me on my sidekick, man. For real, man.
That beat sucks.
Sidekick, on my 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 sidekick. Oh, sorry, are we done with the song?
It's awful.
I couldn't tell.
That's awful.
It's bragging about owning a sidekick, which is the funniest thing in the world. Talk about dating your song instead. Wait. Don't. You're going way too fast here.
Okay.
That's snap and roll, right?
That is snap and roll. You knew it.
I think there's an argument to be made that snap and roll is the worst song on the album.
Wow. Okay.
For me, Charlie, for me, getting to song 4 and realizing, oh no, this is what's going to happen now. This is what this is going to be, is there's going to be one beat that sounds aged and bad, and he's just going to go, hey, over it the whole time. And it's just going to be that over and over and over for 4 minutes at a time. You mind skipping ahead? You mind playing more of the clip?
Sure.
Hey.
I'm pulling up some lyrics here because I got to check out how. So they actually annotate the Yule, okay. Which is two U's, sure. Two A's, and an L at the very end.
Sure.
Snap and roll and snap. Soulja Boy, gonna throw them snacks. Do my dance in the club. Now watch me hit that Roosevelt. Get your camera ready, because your boy about to jig. Lean with super fresh before you can count to 6. Aw, man.
Why?
I'm in here, foe. Doing my dance on the floor. We screaming you in the club. We Superman. Remember that reference to that song that he sang about 2 songs ago?
Right, when he ejaculates on a woman and then has her... be in a blanket.
Okay, so that was something that was hotly debated in the playing of this song.
Yes, I agree.
This was true for you too?
Yes.
You had to understand the Superman reference in the song?
Is he punching a woman in the face,
right,
or is he ejaculating on her back and covering her in a blanket?
Yes, that was the question. Is there a definitive answer?
The definitive answer is either way, Soulja Boy is an asshole.
Either way, it's still terrible.
It doesn't matter. Either way, he sucks ass. So just like let him go into the internet ether and never listen to this again.
I love that the album's called SoldierBoyTellHim.com.
.com.
Oh, man.
Like, okay, no artist in rap history has been this failed this hard at forward thinking, like seeing the end of their career.
Seeing the future.
Like, yeah, no one has been this poor. Like, he makes references to a sidekick, to being on MySpace, and to having a website with his name. And that's his, like, I'm so good. Like, the MySpace thing kills me. When the guy in Ya is mentioning, like, I go on your MySpace. That's amazing.
Isn't at one point he says something like, we hitting it in this new thing in 2007, 2011.
Oh my god,
it's great.
Okay, this is just objectively bad.
Yes,
right?
Of course, no question. This thing is awful.
Don't get mad.
Do you want to talk about Donk?
That's my favorite question, and the answer is no. Just kidding. Answer is yes.
I want to know what it's like, but he gets, like, the song starts and he just starts saying, like, everything all at once. He's just, like, stream of consciousness, like, being channeled by some,
right,
like, evil demons.
But his consciousness can only channel where he is, who he is, what is happening in the moment. Like, it's not like he's saying anything. He's just like, I'm here now. I'm in a studio. We're singing a song about how the beat's going to happen. You're looking forward to the beat. Anyway, here we go. I have a website. And then the song kicks in.
At that point, I was like, oh my god, stop! Like Chinese
punishing.
Water torture.
Honestly, this I think there is a debate to be had. I actually don't think there's a debate to be had. In for my own personal experience, this is the worst rap album I've ever heard.
Is it the worst album you've ever heard?
That's what the question is.
We need to have a tournament and a bracket and see who goes all the way to the end.
Is Corey Feldman's Angel to the Core better? SoldierBoyTellHim.com.
Well, you know, at least he gets a little soft here. You know, he may be someone that is openly misogynistic.
No, don't do this.
At
no.
least he's concerned about finding his soldier girl. So there's that song.
It's like you expect him every time he starts getting to. Like you think at some point he'll stop.
Nope.
He goes at least three measures further than any other musician would.
Yeah, because he has nothing else to say.
Yeah. The whole aesthetic is just doing that.
Yep. You.
Oh, my God. I remember being in a high school dance
yep.
and having the song come on, and all the girls and many of the guys in the room. She's going, oh, and everyone going, you. And I was always like annoying kid with my arms crossed in the back of the room. In fact, I sent to you, I did a little self-research before this, an era of my life I forgot
yes.
where I spent time on forums. And I found a quote on a Rock Band 2 forum because I was very upset they're including the band Panic at the Disco in Rock Band 2.
We've talked about it on a previous after school special.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm very consistent because my comment, I saved it because it made me laugh. My comment was, Panic blows my mind. I can't believe they have fans. They're all 12, 16-year-old girls anyway. And at that point, I was, I think, 16 years old, which is hilarious. Like, I'm like dissing 16-year-olds.
Putting down your own generation.
We're living in a world where Soulja Boy is popular. The worse it is, the more it sells. Nothing's changed. I'm still as annoying, and I can't regret it because I can't imagine any of the people who were into the song back in the day listen to this album and go, yeah, this holds up. This is great.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. Like, the people that were excited to dance to the song back in the day, do you think they still like this stuff?
I think if you listen to it at a wedding.
Yeah.
You go, oh,
if this comes on at a wedding, I will dance to it. I promise you, Mark.
You will do this?
Yes.
I will not.
Completely.
It's ingrained in my DNA. Do you see that? That's almost 10 years ago I wrote that comment. It's not changing.
Yep. Another one that annoyed the bejesus out of me is Let Me Get Him.
This is a public service announcement.
Oh, I remember.
Shootout is a dance and is not intended to incite any violent behavior. Yule.
Hey, this your boy Soulja Boy, Shawty. I got a new dance for y'all.
So how many dances has he come up with at this point? Like, this is number two. I got a new dance for y'all.
I got a new dance we're going to do. Ah!
Gotta do the pool, Pally. Then you take your arm and pull your trigger finger. You know what I'm saying?
This is it. This is the worst song. I changed my mind. This is the worst song. That just that it's like a like I'm being psychologically activated to die. I just hate it.
And there is a lot of gunshot in that song. Like, I understand using gunshots as percussion, you know, MIA. But, like, this is, like, every four beats, there's a gunshot going off in the song.
If he just,
it's horrifying.
If he said A once.
Yeah.
Imagine.
We haven't talked about Bapes yet. We got to get into Bapes.
Hey, Reb, I just got back from the mall, man. Guess what I got? Man, what you get, Soulja Boy? Man, I got me some bathing apes.
I got me some bathing apes. I got me some bathing apes.
I got me some bathing apes. I got me some bathing apes. I got me some bathing apes. I got me some bathing apes. I got me some bathing apes.
He can't possibly be doing it for another verse, but no. If you actually read Dante Alighieri's Sixth Circle of Hell, if you read the text closely, he actually describes the rhythm of Soulja Boy Tellum's Bapes. It's so droning. It's like people call swans droning, but this is true droning. Soulja Boy
Tellum's
Bapes.
People call swans punishing, but this is true punishing.
This is the greatest swan song ever recorded.
Bathing apes.
Oh my god.
It is an
atrocity?
Astounding accomplishment.
You're way more having fun with it. I had genuine difficulty listening to this. I thought to myself, I don't hate myself. There's no reason for me to hurt myself. I can do anything else with my time.
I'll say that I maybe only listened through it twice, but figured that was enough.
Yeah, that's definitely enough. My favorite thing that's ever happened with Soulja Boy, and it's got a little bit of an ugly history because some people took what he did here in kind of a racist direction, and I don't cotton to that. But I do think it's we keep talking about objectivity, but when someone is as clear with where they stand as Soulja Boy, it's hard not to feel objectively about their actions. I think it's objectively hilarious. That time that Soulja Boy played the video game indie hit Braid on the internet and posted a video of that online.
Okay.
I'd like to send you a clip. I'd like you to just maybe play the clip.
Oh, man. Hey, it's your boy Soulja Boy Tellum. Hey, they got this game, right, for people who smoke or people who drink. Like, if you drink beer and you get drunk, or if you smoke weed and you get high, and you just, anything, like, if you just be getting fucked up, they got this game, right? Oh, no, this shit called Braid. Oh, the fuck. Hey, watch this shit. It's about this little guy in a suit, and he walk around, and he ain't got no point to the game. You just walk around jumping on shit. It look like Mario in the future. And it's Mario in a business suit with his hair dyed orange and a tie on. And he just walk around jumping shit, but what's the funny part about it? You can do this right, watch this. You.
What do you do? How you do that? How you
now,
do
if you didn't catch that, I just went back in time. Through the whole game, he just be going back in time. Watch this shit. Like, you about to die. You be like, oh, shit, I'm gonna die.
So, okay, it's 2.5 minutes. At one point, he mentions using that time rewind potion that never runs out. So, if you like some fun internet history, go there for your Soulja Boy internet history. Don't go to SouljaBoyTellHim.com.
It's Mario. He dyed his hair.
Yeah. He's got that time rewind potion that never runs out.
One of the great viral videos that I was familiar with was the screamo version of Soulja Boy, as covered by I Set My Friends on Fire.
Oh, I think I know this.
I don't think my YouTube is working.
Wow, your YouTube. You know YouTube's for all of us, Charlie? Don't just take it for yourself.
My tube. I think I'm going to have to ask you to play it.
Don't talk about your tube.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to play it.
Okay, send it to me.
I can't.
Ooh. I'm going to hate this, dude. Like, there's no way I hit play on this. I'm going to be like, ah, yay.
Let it run. What's it?
I don't know if I ever want to hear that again.
I like it. Okay. It becomes guttural screaming.
Well, we've learned a lesson today, is that there is a further depth to be plundered.
Wow. What a treat.
This was the worst.
It hasn't gotten better with age.
No, it's not.
I'm glad, though, that I can finally say I've listened to this dang thing the whole way through, and I know everything that Soulja Boy had to say back in 2007. The answer is not very much.
The opposite for me. I regret that I now know that he had nothing to say. I feel like I've wasted my life. I feel like I don't know what my next move is. I feel like I need to talk to someone about it. I feel like Soulja Boy has really put me in a bad spot.
Right. All right, so with that, I'm going to take Ya.
That's amazing. Are you really?
Yes. And I'm going to take Crank That Soulja Boy and put it on my Best Of 2007 playlist.
Your Best Of 2007? Oh, I thought you meant you were going to say your Terrible Songs I Never Want to Hear Again list. Nope. Are you kidding me?
I think that Crank That is a cultural moment. And much like Hotline Bling, it deserves a
You know what
a
else was a culture? Oh, don't do that. Oh, Charlie, don't do that. Don't compare Hotline Bling to Crank That Soulja Boy. That's some craziness right there. Are you serious?
I mean, it's got a dance, does it not? It's got a meme viral video. It's got
Who
a
cares?
Person that everyone seems to like.
So? Therefore, like comparable the quality? Wow. So Gangnam Style, Crank That Soulja Boy.
They're all cut from the same cloth. It's the same tree.
Well, if you're just going to take anything that's a cultural movement, well, then I suggest maybe you try taking Nazism, because that was also a cultural movement, Charlie.
I got me some bathing. I got me some bathing apes. I'm maybe 2 or 3 listens away from taking Bapes as well, just so you know.
You're a lunatic. Are you serious?
There's something about it that's just, like, hypnotic and...
Never.
Never Soulja Boy.
I listen to like something weird, like a 40-minute swan song that's one chord. You can never ever tell me that I listen to crazy stuff again. That you're gonna listen, you're like, maybe I'll take Bapes too. I'm not sure. Never again can you accuse me of that. You're far the deep end.
Okay.
I would rather. I can't think of anything
eat
I would rather
bulb.
Do less. I would rather eat a light bulb. I would rather have a horse eat a light bulb and have it kick me to death in the head. I never wanted. I don't want this. I don't want this in my life. I regret having to listen to it. But I'll go ahead and I'll take Bapes. I'll take Crank
yes.
That.
Good choice.
And I'll take my own life in your hands because I'm lost.
This, you did this to me. This is your fault.
I'm not taking anything. That's crazy. I think you're a lunatic. I'm gonna remember this every time you don't take a song. That's insane.
All right. I think that's fair. All right. We did it.
I don't know.
You're in shock.
I can't believe this.
Well, we hope
you can't handle Drake. You, when we listened to that last Drake song, you're like, ugh, I'm just so tired of Drake. It's so samey. Future, you're like, oh my god, I'm not gonna take Future. So annoying. Soulja Boy, you're like, ha, it's a cultural movement. I'm on board.
Soulja Boy makes me laugh.
Future makes me laugh. Have you heard Blow a Bag? That's hilarious.
Maybe that's how I need to approach him from now on. Just treat him like Soulja Boy. I'll be taking everything.
I'll be back today.
I'd have been nothing but gay.
We should make that a mashup, but whatever. I don't even know you anymore.
Okay. Well, I hope you've had a good time listening to the show. I hope you have your own thoughts on, say, anything Vampire Weekend or Soulja Boy. Hey, if you do have comments, let us know in our social media feeds. You've got your own reactions to these pieces or other albums that were important to you or things that you'd like to hear us talk about on future episodes, do be sure to send us an email. That's weeklybeatshow@gmail.com. We love throwing these after-school specials together. I know it's been a long time since we had done one of these, so it felt good to get back in the saddle and loosen ourselves up from the restraints of a normal week. So at this point, we have been podcasting for like 4 hours, so
it's a long time.
This chair is starting to get a little bit, a little damp.
My butt hurts.
Yeah. But thanks for being a part of the show. Keep it tuned to Weekly Beats throughout the rest of the year as we continue to cover all of the weeks as the year progresses. Lots of big albums on the horizon, and potentially some more specials in the future as well. Mark, we still got to finish up teaching Tool.
I just realized you're my own Sisyphean torment. You're my, like, weird myth that's, like, in my head. This is all my head. I need to overcome this.
Hey, speaking of that, maybe we should talk about some Serge Tankian on the next after-school special. Get some Elect the Dead. Some Imperfect Harmonies.
I'd be into that.
All right. Well, that'll do it for us on the show. We'll see you next week for a regular episode. Until next time. Hey, that outro music. Superman, do it. Soulja Boy, I been it. Oh. Why me crack it? Why me roll? Why me crack that Soulja Boy? That Superman, that. Oh. Now why me crack that Soulja Boy? Now why me you crack that Soulja Boy? Now why me you crack that Soulja Boy? Now why me you crack that Soulja Boy? Soulja Boy, I been it. Oh. Why me crack it? Why me roll? Why me crack that Soulja Boy? That Superman, that. Oh. Crank that song, now why me you? Crank that song, now why me you? Crank that song, now why me you? Crank that song, now why?